It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 7th day of July, 2022. This is the Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And that, of course, is where you go if you'd like to be part of the real-time multimedia madcap, merry, wacky, zany extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between and the great globe round, and whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. Hi, I'm Robin, and a little bit of a follow-up just before we get into the regular business at the beginning of the program. A little bit of a follow-up on the police shooting yesterday. Oh, by the way, if you pop by the chat room, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky. And they will be happy to see you. But yeah, okay. Now let's do the beginning of the program stuff first. By all means, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So we say a very kind thank you to our 7th day of the month subscribers, and that means we say thank you to James. Thank you, James. And thank you so very kindly to Kat in Ohio came in after the program yesterday. Thank you, Kat. And so did our dear friend Cynthia in the Bay Area. Thank you so much, Cynthia. So that means that we lowered the fundraising goal considerably. And the challenges put forward by Paul from Parts Unknown and Ralph's challenge in honor of our first 1 month with our little Lily Junie Lee. Thank you both so kindly. And thank you also to our dear friend Beth in Dallas. Thank you so much. So where are we now? Well, the fundraising goal is down to, let's see. $625. Sorry, that took a minute. But $625. So thank you so very much for getting it down that far. If we could keep at it, some bills get paid, and that would be more than wonderful. Thank you so very much. Now, like I said, a little follow-up to the story that began the program yesterday. A little bit more information has sort of dripped out about the young man that the cops blew away in Beckley yesterday. He was apparently a bad person. And we all know that that if somebody is a bad person, it's okay for the cops to waste them without, you know, costing the taxpayers the expense of a trial. He was 36 years old. He was from Culpeper, Virginia, and he had come to the home of his former significant other, ex-wife, ex-spouse, tried to break into the house. He was up to no good. And then when the law got called, he went on the run. He ran from them, maybe squeezed off a round or two at them. And so that's why they fired when he was standing there. That's why they fired what sounded like 20 or 30 or 40 rounds of pistol ammunition into him and around him, and made his dead body jump up and down on the pavement, because he was a bad, bad person who certainly deserved to die. Okay? Just in case anybody was wondering after the audio that we had yesterday. Yeah, right, Anatole says, or 70 rounds. Yeah, who's counting? I mean, he just needed to die. And I wish the cops had been that vigilant, say, on July the 4th in Highland Park, Illinois. But as Michael Moore pointed out, and thank you to Kevin in Massachusetts for making me aware of this, Michael Moore published something earlier saying he knew no one would expect a woman was the mass killer, and he was right. How the Highland Park shooter understood the country he lived in, which allowed him to initially escape the massacre he created. Michael Moore writing, I'll say this about mass murderer Bobby Cremo. He knows that we're safe from the 51% of the population who don't do mass murder. 99.9% of the mass murderers are men, so he knew that the best way to escape his slaughter on Monday in Highland Park, Illinois, was to blend in with the terrorized crowd running for their lives, and to do so dressed as a quote-unquote woman, because no one would dare suspect he was the shooter because, well, he was a quote-unquote woman. He had dressed as a woman even as he was up on the roof wearing a skirt and makeup as he fired off his 83 or more bullets. This is strong writing, and it's accurate. Bullets is a polite word in this case. The ammo he used is in his high-powered assault rifle, a weapon of war, is able to blow one's head off. On Monday, there was at least one victim with half his head gone. A woman was missing much of her upper torso. Another woman had most of one leg blown off by just one bullet. I want every network and newspaper to do their duty to the truth and fucking show America what this really looks like. Stop blurring out the truth. When you do that, you're liars. You pretend that by not showing the carnage, you're being respectful to the families of the dead. Wrong. Funny how he's saying something here that we said a week ago, four or five. Well, we said we were talking about this back during Uvalde, oh so long ago. You're disrespecting the dead by not showing the sacrifice they made so we can have a Second Amendment. Stop your BS and do your job. Show the world the real America in all its despicable violence. And then goes on to take apart Joe Biden for calling it senseless violence. You know, which it isn't. There's nothing senseless about it. It was very well planned. There was a lot of sense involved in creating that horror. But don't worry, the suits at the multi-millionaire, multi-billion-dollar for-profit media centers will never ask the American people to actually look at the fruits of Second Amendment remedies and Second Amendment freedom. They'll never do that. No. And you know what? Maybe not to get sideways with Michael Moore, but maybe there's a reason not to. Because this is Merca. And there's probably about, 25 to 35% of the people in this country who would, and I'm using the word by choice, get off on seeing those horrifying images. You doubt me? Because I'm pretty sure that I'm right in that regard. Oh, and by the way, coming from Wired, a little something about some devices that here in our incredibly high-tech world, some devices called ALPR, A-L-P-R. Automated license plate readers. These things pick up license plates. You know, it's probably part and parcel of things like automated speeding ticket generators, where you never even know there's a cop around or anything, but they take a picture of your license plate and they show how fast you were going and they send you a ticket. And then you're screwed for trying to fight it. Well, 9 states in the U.S. have banned abortion entirely. More will be following in their wake. And because they never let up, because they never take a day off, as we previously discussed, these godforsaken haters of women and people who can get pregnant. I'm sorry, Bette Midler, if that gets you upset, but you know, you'll just have to, you know, die mad about it. Because not all the people who get pregnant are women. Some of them are trans men. And there's no reason to make trans men feel like shit by misgendering them. But anyway, the front line of Republican thought now, it's not inflation, and it's not it's not climate change. No, of course it's not climate change. And it's not even rigged and stolen elections that they grunt and bray and hoot about. The thing that Republican lawmakers all over America are absolutely obsessed with is how best to use the law to torment women. And hence the ALPRs, the automated license plate readers. And those things, according to some Republican thought, and I use the word loosely, it's basically just ravening, babblesome, toxic hatred, is to use the ALPRs to prevent women from crossing state lines to access reproductive care in civilized states. And that's the thing. The ALPRs are already well deployed in all kinds of states. And so the police can then access license plate data collected by their ALPRs, and they can reach out to private companies like Flock Safety and Motorola Solutions, and they can get access to that data, and then in turn they can use that data to track a woman's movement in trying to exercise a right in a state that isn't entirely consumed with hatred for people who get pregnant. Flock Safety, according to that company, they've got their ALPRs, they've got them installed in over 1,500 cities in 42 states in the U.S., And back in 2021, Vice took a look at the issue and found out that anyone who administers a Flock camera can make the data Flock captures available to police, a homeowner association's board, or the individual members of an entire neighborhood. Because you're out in public, and theoretically out in public, according to fairly long-standing law, when you're out in public, you have no reasonable expectation of privacy. For instance, that car I've told you about that was parked at Tamarack a couple of Sundays back and had the Joe and the Ho Gotta Go sticker on it, well, I took a picture of it. And the Michigan license plate is fully visible. I would be entirely within my rights if I posted that picture and did not blur out the license plate. Because in point of fact, license plates are designed to be seen. And so there's every reason to expect that maggot states that despise women and other people who can become pregnant will weaponize this technology against those people. And all they got to do is mount them at state lines. Say, in Texas, maybe you'd want to mount them at every road that crosses into New Mexico. Because New Mexico has yet to take a big steaming dump on the rights of over half of the population of this country. And it would be a fairly easy computer search. There probably wouldn't even be a search warrant required. They're going to do everything they can to turn this into a fascist theocracy. And, well, you know, we have the majestic, most puissant, dread sovereign, supreme Catholic majesties of the Supreme Court to thank for it. And, of course, the church that that drove their decision-making, and whose dictates and doctrine and dogma are actually more important to those supreme etceteras than the Constitution that they have sworn to uphold. Terrified yet? Feeling a little like a handmaid yet, ladies? It's where we are. How about, Ron in Raleigh says, going back to the update at the beginning of the program,
I shot a man in Beckley just to watch him die.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. There went our $625 fundraising goal.
Don't take your gun to Beckley, boy. Don't take your gun to Beckley.
Yeah, they both work, Ron. They both do. Huh? Oh, well. Somebody loved him. But they didn't love him enough because they didn't keep him from being a bad person who needed to be killed. This day in history, Scott in San Diego says, Otto Frederick Rowetter of Davenport, Iowa, United States, invented the first single loaf bread slicing machine. A prototype he built in 1912 was destroyed in a fire, and it was not until 1928 that Rowetter had a fully working machine ready. The first commercial use of the machine was by the Chillicothe Baking Company of Chillicothe, Missouri. Yeah, you thought I was going to say Chillicothe, Ohio, didn't you? Who sold their first slices on July the 7th, 1928. Their product, Clean Made, K-L-E-E-N-M-A-I-D, sliced bread, proved to be a success. Prior to this, it is not known that the greatest thing since was. Whatever it was probably selling like hotcakes. July 7th, 1928. And now you know the rest of the story. Scott says, pardon my yeah, but this early in the show, but wouldn't authorities with such a device need to know a woman was pregnant and her intentions for crossing state lines? Why, yes, they would, Scott. And they would find that out by leveraging her period tracker data that companies will just turn over at a hard look from law enforcement. Or maybe they could just find out who was pregnant from doctor's offices, because HIPAA is not that strong. And I'm sure individual state legislatures will move to make sure that... Maybe they'll have a statute that says that doctors will routinely turn in to, say, the Department of Health and Human Services, a list of all the pregnant people in the state who can then be tracked. This is not going to be at all difficult for them, and we will probably not be able to, you know, unless Democrats, progressives, liberals, centrists, moderates, and otherwise decent human beings get off their asses and vote this November like their lives depend on it. I know so many people on our side of the aisle are sick of being told that the solution to this is voting. But, and I don't want to put too fine a point on it, it is. It is. Because there's not going to be any Dea Ex Machina swing out from offstage left and save women's rights in this country. It's simply not going to happen. You have to vote, and vote in such numbers that they cannot be overwhelmed by voter suppression or voter intimidation or voter elimination. That duty is upon each of us, and it's not just upon women. It is upon men who have got to understand with the same degree of urgency that women do exactly what is at stake here. But I'm getting off to kind of this being Thorn in the Side Thursday, I have a thorn. Oh God, do I have a thorn. I mean, this is a real Lulu too. There's a dude, a black dude, I'm sorry, that's kind of central to the story. Otherwise, I wouldn't mention it. But there's a black dude named Jerome Davison who is running for Congress in Arizona. Stan Suman, you ever heard of this guy? And he's got an ad. And what an ad it is. Of course, if you're running for office as a Republican, and this is nothing new, it's kind of a requirement now that you make at least one ad that features you, the candidate, fondling and caressing and holding lovingly an AR-15. Because, of course. And so this, it's video, so there are certain limitations to talking about it on radio, but suffice to say, it features people in Klan robes, and the Klan robe has, on the left breast, the Klan robe has a donkey in silhouette, circled by, inside a black circle. Black circle on the white robe with a black donkey. And it's a Klansman. Get the hockey puck.
Democrats like to say that no one needs an AR-15 for self-defense.
Amidst the debate over guns, a GOP congressional candidate in Arizona wants to make rifles great again, and he's showing it in a new campaign ad.
But when this rifle is the only thing standing between your family...
Yeah, and by the way, the Klansmen with the Democrat donkey on their robes are apparently attacking Jerome Davison's home with a garden rake. That's right, a garden rake. But heroic Jerome Davison wearing a gray business suit with a white dress shirt and a tie, and holding up an AR-15, and he's got some super dark shades on because he's a badass. Well, he sees the Democrat Klansman coming.
And a dozen angry Democrats in Klan hoods. You just might need that semi-automatic.
In this ad posted...
And then the Klansman attacking Jerome Davison with garden implements turns around when they see studly, heroic Jerome Davison holding his AR-15. And they realize, oh my God, we're outgunned. We only brought garden equipment. And they turn tail and, well, their sheets billow out behind them.
To Twitter, Jerome Davison for Congress argues that an armed group of Democrats in Klan outfits would be an appropriate reason to need a semi-automatic weapon. On Twitter, the former NFL Raiders player went on to explain, "I was born in 1970 in Mississippi. When the KKK came to town, I always felt safe because my father had rifles to protect us."
Interestingly, by 1970, when the Klan came to town, I hate to break it to him, but those weren't Democrats. No. Oh, what an idiot! I mean, what an addle-pated jackass dumbfuck. Racist white liberals in Klan... That word, liberal, I don't think he knows what that means.
Racist white liberals love to tell me that my lived experience didn't happen.
Well, no, nobody's saying his lived experience didn't happen. It's just that it didn't happen the way he fantasizes. The Klan is a real presence. That's why... That's why old 666 himself, greasy-headed B-movie actor Ronald Wilson Reagan, went to Neshoba County, Mississippi in 1980 in August, coming up on the 42nd anniversary thereof, flush with the Republican nomination for president, and up to his eyeballs in crooks and footpads and highwaymen and cut purses and various and sundry other forms of Republicans, went to the Neshoba County Fairgrounds and delivered a speech about states' rights that every Klansman within hearing distance and who heard it on broadcast, however they knew that Ronald Reagan was their man. And they were going to vote for him anyway because, well, they're Klansmen. And they're Republicans. A, how stupid is Jerome Davison? B, how stupid does he think the people... Oh, I should probably not ask that question, should I? But every time you see one of these things, it's not so much the idiot behind the ad... It's the idiots that the ad is being aimed at.
Well, see, there's Robin being an elitist snob bitch again because he's saying people is idiots what thinks that the Democrats was goddamn Klansmen.
Well, you know what they might have? They probably were Klansmen in 1876. You know, when Reconstruction got sold out with the election of Rutherford B. Hayes. That wasn't 1876, though. It's a little bit later. Exactly, Scott.
Shades of Chuck Heston. You'll get my garden weasel when you take it out of my cold, dead hand.
Garden weasel. Another reason this program is as unique as it is, because... there's probably not another radio program in the country today that had a reference to a garden weasel. No. Yeah, Matt in San Francisco observes, well, he was right about Democrats bringing garden tools to a gunfight, so there's that. Now, see here, I'm willing to bring my pruning shears. They look like really big scissors. They're very scary. And for all I know, all over Arizona, Stan, people are saying, you know, that Jerome Davison's right. Them liberals, I mean, they're the ones in the Klan robes. Because David Duke is definitely a liberal Democrat, right? Sure. And, I saw that. Made me sad, Ron. Subject line obituary. One of my favorite actors crossed the rainbow bridge today. Sonny Corleone, Santino.
Look what they've done to my Santino.
Sonny Corleone, a.k.a. James Caan, R.I.P. He was 83 years young and quite the badass in his day. It, probably way more of a badass than Jerome Davison. Yeah, not just The Godfather, but Misery. And I think the first time I ever saw him in a film was, of all things, Rollerball. Still trying to figure out why I was allowed to go to that movie, but I was. And, of course, it's centered on a dystopian future and a dystopian sport for a dystopian future. And Rollerball, frankly, looked kind of fun. Oh, never mind. Yeah. Heck of an actor. And if you've watched The Offer yet on Paramount, all 10 episodes, you know they were terribly, terribly excited when they got James Caan to sign on to play Sonny. He will be missed. I don't know. Had he done much lately? I don't recall. But yeah, thanks for the reminder, Ron. Now that we've dealt with the monumental stupidity of Jerome Davison as our first thorn in the side, let's move on to some more thorns. How about representing Beth Van Duyne, D-U-Y-N-E, of Texistan? Now, she's a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian Republican. And of course, when the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill was signed into law back in November of last year, it's kind of busy at the moment. But, some people took a victory lap. Thom Tillis of North Carolina, a Republican, took a victory lap because he had a hand in crafting the bill. Kirsten Curtsey Cinema of Arizona also took a victory lap because, she was key to the negotiations as well. Meanwhile, the maggots were screaming, "Socialism! It's socialism! The flag is falling! Oh my God, socialism!" Including the aforementioned Beth Van Duyne. I mispronounce hers. And she voted against the bill. But lo and behold, today, she tweeted, I am thrilled for DFW Airport to receive this important funding, which will ensure one of the largest airports in the country can address energy by taking a balanced approach and creating solutions without heavy-handed regulations. Right, it was infrastructure bill money, part of that $1.2 trillion. DFW Airport lands $35 million for new zero-carbon power plant. Wait, zero-carbon power plant? They'll drum her out of the maggot party for that. Zero carbon in Texas? Merciful heavens. But no, she took credit for it. She's thrilled. Just thrilled. Jamie Dupree, who's a journalist, said, yet another example today of a GOP lawmaker taking credit for money approved by in the bipartisan infrastructure law. Representative Beth Van Duyne voted against the infrastructure package, but happily touts new money from it for the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. But she is far from the only one. You remember, this is a good, this is an of course moment. 3X Marsha Blackburn, back when the bill was being debated, she said, "He was the gateway to socialism." Nonetheless, she's eagerly working to get her share of the loot for Tenistan. And then there's Governor Ron Monkey Up DeSantis. It'd be great if we could really make him wear this. According to the Orlando Sun Sentinel, he's been on a spending spree for months, taking credit for millions of dollars in federal stimulus money he's handing out to mostly rural Republican counties, while at the same time bashing President Biden's big government spending. Federal bucks have bolstered the state budget for 2 years in a row, shoring up the state's reserves and funding such things as the governor's job growth program, climate resiliency against rising waters, road projects, broadband expansion, college training programs, and tax cuts. There's the thing, though. How can he take credit for climate resiliency programs when it's illegal in the state of Florida to say either climate change or sea level rise? That's a pretty neat trick. But hypocrisy, well, the Republican Party is immune to the charges. They don't care because they know that the people who vote for them aren't going to look with any degree of scrutiny. Because it's just a case of confirmation bias. Oh, let's check in with the former guy, the former grifter in chief. He's having a shit hemorrhage with the news that the investigation is expanding in Georgia. District Attorney Fannie Willis and her grand jury, and the fact that yesterday, or day before yesterday, seven of his grifty colleagues were served with subpoenas, including Lady G and Rudy Giuliani and Jenna Ellis, John Eastman, and Jackie Pick Deason, a pettifogger, and Kenneth Chesbro, another pettifogger, and a third pettifogger by the name of Cleta Mitchell, who was present at the down-low meeting that Nitwit Nero had with Brad Raffensperger. Fannie Willis yesterday said, "Well, it's possible that we..." she was asked on MSNBC, "You know, you're gonna subpoena Nitwit Nero?" And she said, "Anything's possible. We'll just have to see where the investigation leads us. I think that people thought that we came into this as some kind of a game. This is not a game at all. What I'm doing is very serious. It's very important work, and we're going to do our due diligence in making sure that we look at all aspects of the case." This, of course, led Nitwit Nero to throw a confessional tizzy on his social media site. "Both of my phone calls to Georgia were perfect." Can you hear where he capitalizes and how I said, "Both of my phone calls to Georgia were perfect. I had an absolute right to make them. And in fact, the story on the one call was given a retraction or apology by the Washington Post because they were given terribly false information about it. And when they heard the actual call, they realized their story was just wrong. Thank you to the WP. I, as does anyone else, just look at the Democrats, have the absolute right to challenge the results of an election.
This one corrupt, rigged, and stolen.
Of course, what's interesting is that, and again, nobody will check him. None of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers will check to see if he's lying to them some more again. The only thing the Washington Post did was correct a couple of misquotations. And then he kept on socialing? I mean, he's not tweeting. He's not allowed on Twitter, so he kept on socialing?
I did nothing wrong in Georgia, but others did. They cheated in the 2020 presidential election, and those are the ones who should be investigated and prosecuted. Letter to follow. I had them. They knew I had them. They thought I was crazy, but I fooled them with the strawberries.
There should be a nationwide campaign to mail him a pair of ball bearings. Thousands and thousands and millions of pairs of ball bearings so that he can
rant and rave about the strawberries. Of course, I always get extra strawberries on my ice cream with my cake. I did nothing wrong.
Well, take an oath and say that to the grand jury there. Tangerine Tiberius? What could possibly go wrong? Subject line, Cleta Mitchell. Billable Rick wants to know, Robin, is Cleta somehow related to Steve from Georgia Stan's dog, Cletus? Well, I hope for the sake of sweet little Cletus, no. Cleta is just the Latinate feminization of Cletus. It's, she's part of the Cleti Collective. And, by the way, I apologize for the dead air and stuff, but this is one of those days when the air conditioner just can't keep up. It is 86 degrees in here right now, and it is humid. It is humid as a spongy day in hell right now here. So that's why the dead air. A new meme, Ron and Raleigh says, all over Quora, there are sites like It's Okay to Be White and others that say things like there was no Southern strategy. Jesse Helms was a Democrat like Strom Thurmond and Trent Lott, among others, that switched to the Republican Party after the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Acts were passed in 1965 and 1964 by Democrats. They love to claim Honest Abe and pretend that the 19th century Democrats are still the party as it exists today. The other big lie. Let's get rid of the FAA and its heavy-handed regulations, right? Oh, I will. Believe me, I will. Ron advises me. Steer clear of the Rollerball reboot. I didn't know there was one. My brain was doing fine without that, Ron. The only Rollerball... I don't know how long it's been since... Maybe the last time I saw it was at the theater. Maybe I need to go and have a look. See how that thing held up since I was a kid sitting in the Martin Theater in the W.T. Grant Plaza in Florence, Alabama. And no kidding, hard news. Well, there is some good news out there. You know, last year, Derek Chauvin was convicted in state court of murdering George Floyd. Well, today he swanned into a federal courtroom on charges, criminal charges, that he violated George Floyd's civil rights, you know, by killing him. And he pled out. He pled guilty to the federal charges. He's doing 22 and a half years in state prison in Minnesota. And today he appeared before U.S. District Judge Paul Magnuson in St. Paul. Judge Magnuson credited him with 7 months already served in state prison and took those off the 21-year federal sentence. The federal sentence will be followed by 5 years of supervised release. And Judge Magnuson said that what Derek Chauvin did was offensive and unconscionable. I guess the homicidal part goes as read. But the judge made it clear. He said, to put your knee on another person's neck until they expire is wrong, and thus you need to be substantially punished. There was also a restitution order, but no actual number, money dollar amount. What goes without being remarked upon quite so much is that there was a second plea. He also pled guilty to violating the civil rights of a 14-year-old boy by the name of John Pope Jr. Several years before he murdered George Floyd, Derek Chauvin had beaten him on the head with a flashlight and then knelt on his neck when he was 14 years old. Speaking to the court, the now adult John Pope Jr. said, I was treated as if I was not a human being at the hands of Derek Chauvin. And then George Floyd's brother, Philanice, said that he still has nightmares hearing the dying screams of his brother and begged the judge to sentence Chauvin to life in prison, which would have been more than appropriate. And then because, well, privilege, Chauvin actually addressed the court and he said, I recognize that the court's got difficulty in handling a case like mine in a politically charged environment. I sure hope John Pope and George Floyd's children have productive and rewarding lives. And he did not apologize. He did not apologize. But he's in prison, and he'll be hopefully 65 years old. Wow, wait a minute. He's going to get out of prison and be eligible for Medicare? Shit. Emilio says Clarence Thomas insists that he has civil rights, and he might be right. Ha, 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 ha. That's a gunner, Emilio. Civil rights. Spirochetes, y'all. Spirochetes. And a couple of days ago, we had the story of Governor Phil Murphy in New Jersey signing in to law some stringent new restrictions on firearms in New Jersey. And it didn't take long before the Association of New Jersey Rifle and Pistol Clubs, Inc. sued the state of New Jersey. For trying to keep massacres from being perpetrated in New Jersey by white men wielding AR-15s. The head of the association is called is named Scott Bach. And he says that he wants the case to go all the way to the Supreme Court and be struck down by our majestic, most puissant, dread sovereign Catholic Supreme Court majesties, like the gun case in New York was. and sad to say, probably got a fighting chance of it. And when something awful happens in New Jersey, nobody will stack the bodies up at Scott Bach's home like cordwood. Well, okay, I'm being unfair. Nobody will stack the pieces of the bodies up at Scott Bach's home like cordwood. Right? And that's the second lawsuit filed against New Jersey for trying to prevent, you know, school kids and parade goers and people who go to movies and try to go grocery shopping from being mown down like human sheaves of wheat by lawful gun owners like Salvatore Ramos and Bobby Cremo and the rest of the young white men. Do those sorts of things. And now to sort of ping pong back to a little bit of good news. We talked about this a couple of days ago. Beto O'Rourke's numbers are rising in the Texas governor's race. The distance between Greg Aspott and Beto O'Rourke now is 6 points. And that's actually a smaller gap than back when dim leader, before he fucked America by being president, won over Ann Richards in 1994. God, was it really that long ago? And Greg Aspott's unfavorability rating has risen to 44%, the highest it's ever been. Come on, Beto. Come on. Randy Radar says, you do realize that the police can send out a signal to disable all iPhones from recording. That's why I initially didn't buy one. No, I'm not aware of that. I've certainly never, I've never experienced anything along those lines. Oh, no, I didn't. That would be something to see. It would be something to see indeed. Got a note from our pal Tamara. Did you see Beto playing guitar with Willie Nelson and friends? It was sweet. I bet it was. I bet it was. I'll have to look that up. What? The Akron Police Department, you know, the guys who blew away Jaylen Walker with over 80 rounds, 60 of which hit his poor body, have now arrested Bianca Austin, the aunt of Breonna Taylor. Bianca Austin went to Akron to protest the slaughter of Jaylen Walker. She was protesting when the Akron PD took her down. Tell me again about the First Amendment right to petition government for redress of grievances. Do please. Hopefully, she will sue the living bejesus out of the Akron Police Department for violation of her civil rights. And by the way, program notice, we approach the top of the hour. I will be subbing along, and I've asked the one and only Tara Devlin to help me this week. I'll be subbing for Malloy again this evening, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And I just had a communication from Mike. He sent me an internet. It's not a big, you know, it's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. But he said he'd like to take the have the entire week to try to get better. He is feeling better, but he just wants to give himself a fighting chance to sound halfway decent. In talking to him, you know, the congestion is largely cleared up. He's still got the lingering, annoying COVID cough. And so Tara and I will be filling in around the Malloy Truth Seeker campfire tomorrow evening. I look forward to it, and I hope you'll tune in for that as well. And like I said, we've got $625 to go in fundraising this evening, and Lord God, we need to get there. We need to get there in a big way. We are thus far at zero. So any help is good help. If you want to run over to headon.live, click on the PayPal button, or become a new subscriber at PayPal or Patreon. And if you do that, and you subscribe for $10 a month, Zed, our buddy Zed, will double your first month's subscription and turn your $10 subscription for the first month into a $20 subscription for up to five $10 a month subscribers. And if we get all five, a little something-something extra goes to Brad and Desi over at the Green News Report, which I think is a really, really nice way of helping out. Basically, when you subscribe here, you help them without having to spend a penny. And that's a pretty neat trick. Thank you, Zed. Thank you. And hopefully we'll get off the schneid and get down from the $625. Basically, that's two shows funding plus $25 of the pre. So that's basically $25 of Tuesday, yesterday, all of yesterday, and all of today. It could happen. Sure, it could. It's always interesting when you see get a look at the inside of a campaign. The Daily Beast had a story about the political advisors for Herschel Walker, who, of course, seeks to unseat Senator Reverend Raphael Warnock in Georgia, who, among other things, is a credibly accused spouse abuser who didn't know that John Lewis was in the House of Representatives. Just a few things here and there. But a closely connected advisor to his Senate campaign got hold of the Daily Beast and spilled the tea. And among other things, provided internal memoranda to the Daily Beast describing the fact that his own campaign does not trust Herschel Walker and are concerned that he, and this is a quote, isn't mentally fit for the job. Among other things, the advisor to the campaign said Herschel Walker lies like he's breathing. And the campaign is at the point that he's lied so much we don't know what's true. And apparently they came. The advisor came forward to the Daily Beast after the Daily Beast had a story on the number of undisclosed children of whom Herschel is the father. And he even lied to his campaign staff about the kids. The campaign staff put out statements about them And then the campaign staff themselves were made out to be liars. The Herschel Walker campaign was described as like a shit show on a train in the middle of a wreck. A campaign's worst nightmare. I would think that will probably be, I guess they can't put shit show on a billboard, and Reverend Warnock probably wouldn't want to do that anyway. In the Daily Beast article, they note, he's claimed he was a trained FBI agent and worked for law enforcement, neither of which is true. He's told a preposterous series of lies about his academic record, forcing his campaign to delete claims from his official bio. He's grossly overstated his business success. He's falsely taken credit for founding a veteran support program. And most recently, he claimed that former President Donald Trump had never said the 2020 election was stolen. Anybody surprised? I mean, you could put out that list with Herschel Walker's name not on it, and it could be any maggot candidate in the whole new 90 states of America, the greatest country in the world on earth now today, for in the universe forever under God. Because it's who and what MAGA is. Thank you, oh so kindly. Thank you, George, for getting us started on fundraising this evening. Hurrah! We're down to $600. That means that Tuesday is funded, fully funded. Wonderful. Thank you so much. And now onward to Wednesday and today. Hopefully we can knock out, it'd be great if we could knock out Tuesday. There'd be some bill paying done. I wish I could say that I was going to fire up the Gulfstream 5 and, you know, get the C-140 behind it and load the Maybach into it and, oh, I don't know, head for Cabo San Lucas for a nice little beach vacation. But no, we'll just do what we always do here. To wit, pay bills. So let's run over to the stress line and see who's with us at the moment. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, Robin, incel right-wing relatives is driving me crazy.
Oh my, you've had holiday time with your family, haven't you, Dave?
Yes, ma'am, I have. My brother, I understand my brother has never been to law school. So I'm going to run this past somebody who has, specifically you. He told me on the way to Muncie from Indianapolis.
Do I need a hockey puck for this?
Oh, yes, and there should be a trigger warning for all freedom-loving individuals in the Horn family to any congregation. Get the extra strength Gorilla Glue tape. Don't mess about. Get the good stuff. He said the American vet that we, and I don't know which we he's referring to, but he said we have the right to overthrow the government and rewrite the Constitution so they don't take away our guns. Obviously, homeless firearms are a big concern for my little brother. It took me about 30 or 40 miles to talk him down off the ledge enough for him to agree that perhaps there were groups of people that really were better off not having firearms. I use the example of people who've committed violent assaults, things like that. Of course, I didn't think my thoughts all the way through, considering my brother had been credibly accused of assaulting his ex-girlfriend the day he got back from Afghanistan. In other words, Robin, it didn't make it to one ear. If I had $20 for every time he used the term China virus, I could pay off the Horns debt for a week. I don't understand. I should have responded in using my Trump voice, but my dad was nearby and my sister was looking daggers at me like, behave, behave, behave. And so I'm going to try.
Meanwhile, you're sitting there.
Yes. Yes, ma'am. You've got it exactly right. I'm sitting there biting on my own hockey puck. And they're like, well, why isn't Dave responding? Because Dave would have looked over at him and said, well, if you believe that, I've got some swampland to sell you. And by the way, how much of that $250 million did you give Donald Trump? You know.
Right. Yeah. Let me take a run at this so that you can
okay.
So that you can at least have some peace of mind.
Well, I thought we had a war over this whole thing about.
Well, but no, yeah. No, not really. I mean, we did, but that wasn't. That didn't settle things, because I suspect, although he did not say it out loud, that what your brother is burbling about is an Article 5 convention of the states.
Oh, no. No, because I mentioned the Article 5 convention of the states, and he looked at me like a cow looking at a new gate.
Oh, that's never good. So he just wants to...
Oh, no.
He just wants to get his revolution
he
on.
Just want, well... Well, let me put it to you this way. His comment about the shooting in Chicago was, if everybody had been armed, it would have ended quickly. I said, yeah, it would have been a bigger bloodbath.
I mean, when
my brother is a...
When even the cops won't shoot? Because they don't know where the bullets are coming from. Gun humpers with no training, pulling out their Glock 19s or whatever, and just sort of and look. Let's consider the if nothing else the acoustics of the situation. You got a parade route down a downtown street. You got buildings on either side. You have what is called in common parlance, Dave, an echo. And so when the shooting starts, yeah. It's really kind of hard to tell where the shots are coming from. Because as a result of the acoustics, the sound of the gunfire is bouncing off of the buildings. And your brother wants what? Lawful gun owners, good guys with guns?
I guess so.
To unholster and just start
his friends.
Hailing bullets?
I think he's trying to convince his friends that our parents were siblings, so he'll gain a little more conservative credibility. But it's an article of faith with this asshole. My sister has seriously been considering trying to petition the courts to have him examined.
Or as George Carlin would say, check his calendar.
Yeah. But I told her that, you know, in Indiana, they can only hold him for up to 10 days without actually formally committing him. So, and he would still...
Yeah, that's really not enough time to accomplish anything.
No. You need about a month to do a full-on physical and mental examination. I mean, if you're going to do a thorough job of it. Because he's like, well, who's going to make the decision? I said, that's what we have doctors, psychologists, and courts for. But, of course, he doesn't believe in courts. He thinks it should be directly done by the citizens. And, I think he's been watching too many Westerns, you know, with the vigilance committees and all of that. And that worked out so well. But Christine even pushed back on him on the way home. And he was like, well, the Constitution is flawed. I said, yeah, it's flawed. But it was better than the Articles of Confederation.
You know, interestingly enough, Dave, if you were to dig back into the deep archives of the Horn and check out some of Dr. Bill's old shows, you might find out something interesting. That the Articles of Confederation, there is at least a cogent academic argument that has been made that the reason for the Constitutional Convention was not because the Articles of Confederation weren't working, but rather because democracy was breaking out all over the place. Real, honest to God, no kidding democracy. And that there was not much in the way of uniformity between the several states. And that and you can also read some echoes of this in Charles Beard's An Economic Interpretation of the Constitution from, 1917?
I'll have to look that up.
I mean, it was a mess. The Articles of Confederation were...
You've recommended that book a couple of times.
Oh, it's you don't have to agree with everything, and frankly, the hardcore capitalists did everything but call Beard a child of God as a way of trying to refute his actual... academic, you know, work, and the ad hominem was just...
They call him an ignorant commie bastard.
Yeah, among other... Yeah,
among this, other
you know, and a drunk, you know, a drunk. They called him a drunk. But none of that refutes the arguments that he makes. And what he basically says is that the Constitutional Convention was called... Not so much because the Articles of Confederation weren't working, but because the moneyed interests in this country were worried that they were working in such a way that they might make their lives a little less comfortable. Because basically, Beard's theory is that... Oh, how I wish Dr. Bill was here. Beard's theory was that the Constitution was drafted... by wealthy men to protect the rights of wealthy men, which the Constitution does pretty damn well when you consider that you don't get to vote if you don't own property, and it's not just own property, you got to own a certain value in property. And you don't get to vote if you're not white.
True.
And you don't get to vote if you're not male. And so that's pretty much... And so that's the affected class that the Constitution protects. Remember, the word woman does not appear in the Constitution. I don't think the word Indian exists. And the only mention that the enslaved population of America gets is to reduce them to 3/5 of a human being, which is worse than no mention at all.
Well, they have stayed, according to the right wing.
So of course the Constitution is a flawed document.
Robin, I got a little professorial with him. I said, I don't care what form of government you have. Within the structure of that government are the seeds of its own destruction. It happened with fascism in Germany and Italy, and to a lesser extent in Japan. However, it stayed on in Spain. It happened in the Soviet Union. It's happened where people have overthrown monarchies and declared independence, like in Haiti. And if it weren't for the rebellion in Haiti, we would have never been able to purchase the Louisiana Purchase from France, because Napoleon needed money, and he needed it badly.
Well, right, and the troops that he had sent to Haiti were dying like flies. Malaria, yellow fever.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's an argument to be made that Napoleon's army had it harder in Haiti than they did in Russia. I mean, if you want to be given a choice between freezing to death versus dying of malaria, what do you think most people are going to choose?
Stick me in a snowbank.
Yeah. Just get a little sleepy and
it's quicker.
Everything goes numb and then bye-bye.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's... Actually, I used to live in Alaska, and according to some people I've met up there, that used to be the way that old folks, if they got tired of living, that's exactly what they would do. They'd give away their possessions, they'd walk out, and they'd lay down on the snow, wrap themselves up and go to sleep. They wouldn't wake up.
Wow.
But what disturbs me the most is my brother was like, well, the revolution started in taverns. And I'm like, okay, yes.
Drunk people, yes.
Drunk people, he goes, and it's going to happen again. I said, oh, so government for the drunks and by the drunks. And you add firearms with that. Oh,
yeah, so that government of the drunks and by the drunks, so that government of the drunks and by the drunks shall not dry heave from the earth.
Well, shall not. Well, of course. Well, that's a very good way of putting it. I mean, you have to keep them drunk so they don't dry heave.
But I mean, that's. I mean, we kid, but the fact of the matter is, in the 1770s. Because, you know, this was kind of a don't drink the water country. It was not unusual for folks, and guys in particular, to be packing away a couple of gallons of wine a day.
Well, the official ration... for a soldier or sailor in the Continental Army was a gallon of beer.
Yeah.
Per day. Now, they rarely ever had a gallon of beer per day, but that was the official, that was the official goal. They were also, they would be issued once a week, 1 pound of meat a day, which was always short. I think they had like a pound of flour each per day. So the soldiers and sailors had to get real creative on making things. And they had supplemented their rations with hunting, and it became an official policy of sending out people to hunt because they were always short of pork or beef to feed the troops.
Oh, and by the way, speaking of which, if you need a good giggle, and who doesn't these days?
Of course.
I think you and I share a common... A common passion for the writings of Mark Twain. Look up a Mark Twain short story called the facts in the Great Beef Contract.
The facts in the Great Beef Contract.
The facts in the Great in the Great Beef Contract. It is hilarious. But it's also because he was such an astute observer of business. He wasn't any good at it, but he was an astute observer of it, of business and government. It's actually a pretty good pretty good sketch, albeit hilariously, of government contracting and the way that people got absolutely breathtakingly wealthy providing war materials to the providing war materials to the Union forces. And of course, just because history is history, part of the reason that we have to cope still to this day with the scions of the Bushes and the Walkers is because one of them got appointed to head the War Materiels Board in the First World War and came out of it stinking rich. Up till then, they'd been Episcopal ministers.
Oh, that was Prescott's doing or Prescott's daddy's doing?
It might have been one of the Walkers. But the Walkers and the Bushes, yeah. Because remember, well, at the time that Prescott went marching off to the Great War, he was a boy from Columbus, Ohio. And he so thoroughly embarrassed his family with this bullshit letter home about saving the life of General Pershing that they had to move. And that's how they wound up in Connecticut. And that's, you know, I mean, that's history.
They were dodging embarrassment.
Yes. Because
they were dodging embarrassment.
Because young Prescott sent a letter home to Mama from the front talking about how he had engaged in heroism and saved the life of General Black Jack Pershing. It was made entirely out of whole cloth. It was just a tissue of lies. He was writing it because he was a smart ass from Yale. And his mother read it as gospel and spread it all over the, all throughout the respectable quarters of Columbus, Ohio.
And they are, a lot of the scions of Columbus were good God-fearing Protestants who would have objected to such buffoonery, but
the thing is, they swallowed it hook, line, and sinker too.
Yeah, but once it was revealed, I mean,
then they were completely embarrassed, and suddenly Connecticut looked
like Bushes could be embarrassed.
Suddenly the Bushes felt like it was time to head off for Connecticut.
Makes me wonder how they got down to Texas. What'd they do? Embarrassing to have to go all the way there.
Well, that was George H.W.'s doing, because he was pals with some of the folks down there. I think John Connolly was one of them. But he went down. Remember, H.W. was a member of Congress for 1 year, or for one term. He was there long enough to vote against the Civil Rights Act. Or the Voting Rights Act. I'm not sure which one, but he voted against it. But he liked the oil business, and he liked the Texas girls, and so he stayed. And along came.
Which means he got in with the Hunt Boys.
I don't necessarily know about that, but he did well for himself, and he stayed in Republican Party politics. You'll recall that. In the post-Watergate era, Gerald Ford
elevated him to be head of the CIA. And if there are certain books you can read where what you'll find out is that Ford and the inner circle of the Republican Party were kind of like, well, you know, he's an idiot and a nerd, but he's a loyal idiot and nerd, so let's give him the CIA.
Yeah, I heard one report that he used to, as a joke, used to sign above his signature, or he used to print on letter notes to people, Chief Spook, and then his signature.
I don't know how. I don't know how we how we got off on this tangent, but we certainly did, and that was fun. But
no, the problem with my brother is, if it came to a hot mess, he'd be grabbing his 45 and whatever else he had at hand, and he'd go a shooting just as quick as you please. Now, he never actually says, I am going to do this, or I am going to do that. He always shades it as if somebody else is going to do it, or he supports the people that would do it. He never actually engages in direct, I want to do this, because he knows the minute he does say something like that, that there are members in his family, including my father, who's as conservative as you get, would be on the horn to the FBI.
Very likely. Oh, by the way, going back previously, I have to pay attention when these things are done. Billable Rick gave me a cowbell for so that government of the drunks and by the drunks shall not dry heave. Thank you for that.
Yes.
I mean, I kind of think thank you for that. And back to Herschel Walker and his propensity for not being a truth teller. Ron and Raleigh says, they'll still vote for him. You foolishly believe that the lies will cause Republicans not to vote for him. It's going to be a tight race. And I think Ron's right. Because, frankly, Republicans...
The more he's known to lie...
Republicans don't care.
They'll love him.
Yeah. I mean, they loved a pathological liar.
As long as you lie, and we know you're lying, we'll support you because it just pisses off the liberals. And that's all they give a shit about anymore, Robin. Meanwhile, I mean, the rank-and-file Republicans, that's all they give a shit about. It's the Clarence Thomases and the Amy Coney Island Barrett and the rest of these clowns that are breaking apart the Republic. Out in the open where God and everybody can see them, and they're playing to the crowd. That is all Clarence Thomas was doing. The man kept his mouth shut for nearly a decade during oral arguments, and it made news when he actually asked a question. And yet we were paying him over $100,000 a year to keep his mouth shut. That didn't stop him going to the Federalist Society or to the Harvard Law School to give speeches or whatever else he wanted to do to make a little honorarium. But I listened to the oral arguments in the case that overturned Roe. And the man was absolutely animated. He was cutting people off. A couple of times he cut old balls and strikes off in mid-sentence, which is not unusual for a justice to do. But it is unusual that he did it with such frequency. You knew which way this was going to go, when he started blathering on about, well, what's the difference between, you know, 15 weeks and 24 weeks? There's no difference, which is bullshit. I mean, the used to be the standard was, can the fetus live outside the mother? Is it viable? And that was, and you can't just arbitrarily go, well, it's going to be 15 weeks or at conception. I've argued with, and I was raised Catholic, and I never understood why after 1973 it suddenly became at conception, because prior to that, you became a human being when you drew breath.
The first breath of life. I mean, that's what the that I mean, that's what's right in the Old Testament.
I was born at 3 pounds, 11 and 3/4 ounces in 1965, Robin. And my parents' biggest concern at that moment was finding a priest to baptize me, because the doctors were rather dubious about whether I would live through the night. Obviously, I fooled them all. But I credit not my baptism on the day of my birth, but the fact that the doctors and nurses worked overtime to make sure that I stayed breathing and that I could do everything I could to heal my little body and learn be able to react. It wasn't until I was 3 days old they diagnosed me with cerebral palsy. But now they were, my mother told me, she worked in a NICU for a while. She was an LPN and she worked in a NICU for a while. And she said, David, it's surprising. They're releasing babies at 2 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And I was floored. I'm like, but I spent a month in the incubator. And she goes, yeah. She said, I couldn't believe it either. And this is the argument the conservatives are using. Well, medical technology has advanced. It hasn't advanced that far. I mean, having a 2-pound baby survive outside the mother is not, it's not as rare as it used to be because of all the medical interventions they have now and the treatment techniques they've got now. But my mother told me a story about a nurse, a black lady, who would take me by the feet when I was just a couple of days old and would tap my heels to remind me to breathe, to get me to breathe, because when I took a breath, it did the opposite of what your lungs usually do. I'd inhale, my chest would compress, it wouldn't expand. When I exhaled, it expanded. That's one of the issues they had. And I evidently dropped about a pound before I bounced back. So it was a close call, but I credit nurses like that lady with saving my life. I don't give any credence to any divine being or beings that may have been overlooking my incubator, because I wasn't released. I was born on April 8th, and I wasn't released until after Mother's Day. They wanted me to be I think my mom said they wanted me to be a full 7 pounds before they would release me. And there were always questions about whether I would have cognitive issues, whether I would be blind, which are common side effects for that low birth weight. I had one idiot who knows absolutely nothing about cerebral palsy claim the reason I was so angry was because I had cerebral palsy. I said, no, I'm angry because I have a brain and I know how to use it. But my advice after the last couple of weeks is not go out and vote. I listened to a podcast called The God Pod. It's a comedy podcast. But one of the things they brought out was, if you don't just go and vote, go and vote and then do one other thing. And then one other thing turns into two other things, or three other things eventually. You got to realize the conservatives have been doing this for over 50 years. They got what they wanted. They were willing to wait until hell froze over. Well, a couple of weeks ago, it did. I got the weather report. There was snow in Hades like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it was right up to up to Satan's little buttocks. But they don't care. And what scares me the most is they're going to come after every other right. And if Clarence doesn't believe they're going to come after Loving versus Virginia.
Oh, no. Hold on, Dave. No. It's not a matter of believing. He knows they won't come after Loving versus Virginia because, A, the court won't overturn it because Slappy, and B, he already told them what to go after. And they are sharp enough and organized enough to follow orders. Okay? I mean, it is just what it is.
Yeah, but how many of those honest-to-God Nazis are going to want to swallow?
All of them, Dave, because they want what they want. Okay? So, he's told them the substantive due process cases that he wants overturned. The Supreme Court of the United States cannot hear an advisory case. The Supreme Court, I mean, this is like carved in stone. I mean, it would be shocking if even this gang of theocratic thugs overturned the doctrine that the court does not issue advisory opinions, even though that concurrence was kind of an advisory opinion. But there's got to be a case in controversy in order to get it to the Supreme Court. None of these shit-eating 501c3 free lawyer Christian tax dodges is going to take a case saying that someone's religious liberty was violated because Clarence married Jenny. Now, I'm sure they're already dragging $100 bills through trailer parks, finding some, and I'm sure they've already got it, somebody who says, well, I'm a Christian, and my next-door neighbor is gay married, and that offends my deeply held religious beliefs. And, you know, the Liberty Council or the Thomas More Center or any of these other filthy little dodges, they'll take that case. They'll troll another $100 bill through a trailer park and find somebody who says that their religious liberty trampled by the fact that Texas no longer has sodomy laws. Okay? And they'll drag another $100 bill through another trailer park, and they'll find some Christian who will say that contraceptives violate their the fact that anybody can have contraceptives violates their closely held religious belief that contraceptives are satanic, and they'll take that case up. But no one is going to take a case up that says that somebody's religious beliefs are offended by an interracial marriage because they have been told not to do that. And nobody who wants to get back at these fascist bastards is going to do that because this court, well, you know. I mean, some people do actually believe in the rules of how one gets a case to the Supreme Court. The fact that the Republicans don't is of no consequence in this issue.
Well, I would just, wasn't there a case where in this last term that regulations that never actually went into effect, but they decided to rule on it.
Yeah,
anyway.
that was the New York gun case.
Wouldn't that be considered an advisory?
No, no, it isn't.
Actual case.
No, it isn't, because at one point there was a case. What that should have been dealt with as is moot. The case had been rendered moot, but they wanted to go ahead and. You know, the Supreme Court, they can do what the hell they want to. And so they wanted to go ahead and stick it.
Because there's no accountability.
No, they stick it to New York. And that's what it was really about, was sticking it to a blue state. And by the way, Scott in San Diego said, look this one up. During the Bay of Pigs fiasco, two private support vessels were the Barbara and the Zapata. George H.W. Bush's oil company in Texas was Zapata Oil, and his wife, of course, was Barbara. And now you know the rest of the story. So there
well,
we go.
You almost sound sober there, Rowan.
Dave, you have yourself a good evening. It's been a great conversation. We'll talk soon,
you
okay?
Too. It was great talking to you, Robin.
And give our best to Christine.
By the way, I only went to Muncie because Christine wanted me there. But I'll let her know you said hi.
Please do. That the whole community says hi.
All right, honey. I'll talk to you later.
All right, you take care, Dave. Bye now. Our buddy Dave in the blind. I need to send out humongous thanks to Barbara. Speaking of Barbara's, thank you, Barbara. Our fundraising goal is now down miraculously to only $500 to go. That means that one-third of yesterday is funded. If we could get all of yesterday funded, that would be lovely. Thank you, Barbara. Thank you so very kindly. So helpful. Thank you. So helpful. And moving on over to the Skype line. Hey, Tracy. Oh, wrong button. You there now? Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I hear you. That was all on me.
Okay. How are you?
I am very, very sticky and warm. It is 87 degrees in the studio with the air conditioner going great guns.
That's yikes. Well, I guess it's better than 100.
Yeah, it beats the hell out of the 95 that I was working in a few weeks ago.
Yeah, there's that part. So I was listening to, I just came on right when you were talking about Mr. Herschel Walker and the great liar that he, the mendacious way he lives his life. But, and that no matter what, like you said, Republicans are going to still vote for him. And so...
Yeah, Ron's not wrong.
No. I mean, look, you see how they, you know, when the great orange shit stain got elected, and then we started with this, and he was getting caught in lie after lie after lie. So what do we come up? Those are just alternative facts. At that point, and nobody called him out on that bullshit, it was a done deal. So why should it be any different? If Reverend Warnock was a liar, everybody would be on his shit about what.
Well, hold up, because you know I saw that focus group a few months ago about Reverend Warnock, and they're already spreading stuff, and the Republicans are already believing it. Well, he beat up on his wife and cheated on his wife too. It's out there, and the truth gets around the world before the facts get around the world. A lie gets around the world before the truth gets its pants on.
Right. So we got that lie, and all this there, and so forth, and so on, and it's just exhausting trying to be a decent human being. And do the right thing. And speaking of elections and trying to be a decent human being and do the right thing. So, you know, there's the big recall here in LA County for our district attorney.
Right.
And the unfortunate shooting murder of the two El Monte police officers. And of course, you know, we talked about this and how they were blaming George Gascon. It's his fault, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, he did not shoot these people. But they were going on. And Steve Cooley, he is the former DA of LA, and he's the head of the recall. And he's like, well, you know, I'm not saying that it's actually his entirely George Gascon's fault, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. So then, upon further investigation, come to find out, it was the county probation office who was supposed to be supervising the guy, which they didn't. And they were getting calls from neighbors and family members saying that the guy was having an issue, and that they need to do something about him, that he had a gun. And all these things that were probation violations, but they did nothing. And so all of a sudden, all these, you know, now Steve Cooley, for the last couple of weeks, or the last week rather, he's been very quiet about George Gascon being at fault for those two police officers, you know, shooting. Because it wasn't his fault. It was the LA County Department of Probation who dropped the ball because they didn't do their job. Apparently, he hadn't reported for 6 months. Six. And again, people were calling the probation office and his probation officer and all these people, and they did nothing. So then today, I was listening to the news, and Steve Cooley, or what is it, he was back on the radio. This is the kind of shit that makes me. See, I thought, so this is all your fault, Robin, by the way.
Figured it had to be sooner or later.
Well, if it hadn't been for you and me finding you and listening to your show and becoming, you know, politically aware and aware of how this stuff works and all this, I would have been blissfully ignorant because of your ass. And I need you to take full responsibility for this.
You could have just been a happy little valley girl.
I would have been a happy little valley girl and just like totally oblivious to whatever's going on, you know, seriously.
Well, you know, I'm just the serpent in the garden.
And because of your happy ass, I am now aware of what's going on, and I spend 90% of my time pissed off. But so he's on the, they were interviewing his ass today on our local news and traffic station. And he, you know, and of course he was, you know, bad mouthing Gascon. Now I have to, he did, and I was waiting for it, for him to bring up the two police officers that were murdered. Didn't say a word about that, because now you know he can't. He can't blame Gascon for that. But then, so this is what he started to do. He was going on about he was not qualified. He had never tried a case. He had never done this. He had never done that. So now he's going on his qualifications. And because of him, you know, the criminal justice things are going to hell in a handbasket, woo-doo-woo, woo-doo-woo. And so here's the best part. And it's the softball quest, you know, like you were talking about some bitch that had been, it was a governor had, they were interviewing her on one of, you know, and there was not one decent hardball, as they call it, quote unquote, gotcha question.
Oh, that was Kristi Noem.
Right. And I'm sitting there, like, oh, God. So he, of course, didn't ask. It's like, so, because one of the questions he should have asked Steve Cooley was now about the report about the probation office. And how do you feel, you know, you pretty much blamed George Gascon for these, the unfortunate murders, shootings of these, those two El Monte police officers. And now that it's been revealed that the probation office hadn't done their job in over 6 months, how do you feel about that? That should have been a question, shouldn't it have been, Robin?
If the person was a competent journalist and doing their damn job, yes.
Yes. But that, you know, so then he asked the gentleman, and I use that term so very, very lightly, because he was the district attorney before Jackie Lacey. So you can amend it. You could, and before him, I believe it was Garcetti, and you know how I feel about Garcetti. So he's like, well, if in fact, you know, the recall is take, you know, which you, and he did that false modesty bullshit. Oh, well, you know, I don't know. I have to think about it. Motherfucker, you're the one that's heading the recall action. If you had no intention of running for district attorney, running again for district attorney, why would you bother?
Good question.
I mean, am I wrong?
No, you're not. I mean, I was going to bring up something else, Tracy. I find it hilarious that I'm sitting here in West Virginia following California politics, but at least it's interesting.
Are you bringing up our governor going to Montana?
No, not going there yet. Although I did love him trolling Ron Monkey up DeKlantis. I love that.
His commercials?
Yeah. I mean, if I was a Californian, I'd be like, spend twice that much, Gav. But yeah. No. And this is the confluence of California politics with shallow vacuous celebrity news.
Oh, okay.
Katy Perry recently got dragged.
About?
Well, she was indignant about the Dobbs decision, and she said, she tweeted something fairly anodyne, like, women's reproductive rights are human rights. I mean, I just made that up. But it was something along those lines, okay? She immediately got dragged because she endorsed that Caruso dude for mayor.
Oh, good. Okay.
And that, and you know that sleazy billionaire has given more money than Carter's has little liver pills to anti-choice, misogynist, woman-hating organizations. Because he's pro-life.
He's pro-life. Uh-huh. Well, you know who else supported his ass? Besides Katy Perry, another, you know, and when it comes to, you know, pretty, you know, rather, I don't want to call white women completely useless, but Gwyneth Paltrow.
Oh, no, no, no. You don't have to preface anything about Gwyneth Paltrow at all, ever. Anybody who has ever hustled a vagina scented candle.
A vagina scented candle.
This is not a commentary on scent. This is a commentary on looking up and going, you know what I need to sell for like $500? A candle that smells like my cooch.
That's my cooch.
And the obsession with women's vaginas. I mean, I think Gwyneth spends more time thinking about women's vaginas than the most hardcore lesbians on earth. I mean, she marketed. God bless America. She marketed a jade egg and told women that they would feel ever so much better if they would just stuff one of those up there and hang out for a while or something. And because it's America, and because we've got a big enough, and because there's enough people in America, you know, she made money. She couldn't sell the vagina candles fast enough. She couldn't make them fast enough to sell them. She couldn't sell the jade eggs fast enough. Poor Jen Gunther, the OBGYN women's health expert from Canada, I think her head was about to explode trying to, because every time I turned around, I used to see a post from Jen Gunther saying, "Well, she's being an idiot again." But she's being a very wealthy idiot.
But she's a very wealthy idiot.
Because stupid sells.
Why can't we come up with something stupid, Robin? Speaking of stupid. Well, it's not stupid. I mean, about something coming up with money or what have you. So, as you guys know, Chris came down up to, you know, hang out with me and Jan. We were going to do a day trip to Solvang and then to the casino. But he met us up at the Cracker Barrel and Camarillo. Now, you know this story, but I have to relay it to the Horn family. So we're having breakfast. And Chris and I are talking, you know, politics and stuff. And I think Jan kind of just spaced out. And I try to include her in the conversation as much as I could. And, you know, and we had a really good breakfast. Even Jan, who does not like anybody like Chris, which I'm like, that's just a testament to how wonderful a person he is.
Well, look at you, Chris.
I mean, as a matter of fact, over the course of the evening, well, let me go back. So we're having breakfast at the Cracker Barrel, and a server walks past me. And for all of those who know, at the Cracker Barrel, they serve their syrup in individual glass bottles. The server walks past me, and I hear the glass, the syrup bottle fell off her tray. And I hear it shatter. And you know how you hear something before you see it or before you feel it or what have you? Well, I got hit with shrapnel from the
glass. Oh, no. Not laughing at, laughing with.
I heard the glass shatter. And the next thing I'm going is, ow. And then I look down. And next thing I know, I'm bleeding at my ankle because of the glass shard, the shrapnel hit my ankle and cut my ankle.
Sign her up, Billable Rick. Sign her up.
So now here I am sitting at the fucking Cracker Barrel, bleeding, and I'm like, this is not happening. And I said, and you know me being me, because I like to terrify white people. I live for that shit. It's the thing that makes me the happiest. Like I said, anytime I have educated or made a white person think, or better yet, scared the fuck out of a white person because of what may happen, because of an interaction that we had, an angel gets his wings.
Yeah, we had a whole bunch of weddings going on Sunday. Because me being me, I looked around because I was the only black person. They didn't even have servers, black servers, at this Cracker Barrel. Okay? And it was so, I said, I'm the only black person in this restaurant. And a piece of glass, and so the one piece of glass that could find me found me. And I said, what is this, a hate crime? I thought the waitress was going to pass out. I'm like, honey, I'm just kidding. No, you didn't do it on purpose.
No, the better response would have been, oh, my driving foot.
Yes, but it wasn't my driving foot. It was my left foot.
So you've got a clutch.
That's true. They don't know I don't have a manual transmission. See, the things that we do. So anyhow, so when the managers came out, with, you know, bandages and antiseptic, and they, you know, cleaned up the wound and put a Band-Aid on it and, you know, all the apologies. But then it kind of started kicking in, but then they did not take it very, I mean, they took my information and everything, but they didn't take this seriously because when I got to the register where there was another manager, and she's like, you know, how was your meal? I said, well, other than the fact that you guys tried to amputate me at breakfast, I was fine. And the manager's like, oh, so you're the one. Oh, my goodness. And I'm like,
oh, no. So there was a report. Was yeah, like, we just fragged a diner.
Right. And I'm like, you know, and then she did her half-assed apology. And I'm sitting here, and I'm standing there at the register, waiting for them to say, well, Miss Porter, we are so we are so sorry about your experience. Please let us comp your meal. It did not happen. So I'm already pissed, right? And I'm hurting, and I'm still bleeding. And so I'm like, okay. So we went ahead and paid for breakfast, and we left. And I'm limping, and so we go ahead on, and, you know, we didn't make it to Solvang. We definitely made it to the casino, but my ankle was still hurting and all this.
One of them, 3-8.
Huh?
One of them, 2-3-8.
Okay, I'm not going. And so...
Well, you know, it's like I hollered a minute ago, sign her up, Billable.
And so I was like, okay, so here we go. So yesterday, I'm sitting, Jan and I are chilling. And I get a phone call. And it's Cracker Barrel. And so Jan's like, here we go. So it was probably the risk manager. And I said, I'm like, are you sure this is your real name? His name was Steve Smith. I'm like, how much more generic can you get?
Now, maybe we shouldn't have given his name out on the air. If that really is your name.
Right. That's like Steve Smith. You know?
Yeah, see, that always takes me back to Dr. Strangelove and Group Captain Mandrake looking at the... Keenan Wynn and saying, now see here, Colonel Bat Guano, if that really is your name.
So I was like, okay. So he called and we talked and he's like, you know, apologize. He's like, how are you feeling? I said, well, I'm still in some pain. I haven't been to the doctor yet, but I'm going soon. And I really didn't appreciate the way I was treated. They kind of didn't take it very seriously. And then on top of the fact, they didn't even offer to comp my meal. At least if you didn't want to comp the entire check, at least my meal. And when I told him that they hadn't even offered, that they did not, that it wasn't even, it shouldn't have even have been a question. He's like, wait, they didn't comp your meal? I said, no, they did not. And you could kind of hear that, oh,
you know, because I don't.
You mean the under the breath? God damn it!
These like the Jesus Barack things we used to
Jesus,
do.
Jesus Barack. And now we were talking about that. Now we need a cabinet level position of. God damn it, Joe.
So then he says, okay, you know, he apologizes, so he's going to send me a letter and a gift card. I said, you know what, save the postage, just send it to me in an email and send me an e-gift card. You know, don't waste the paper and the postage. And he says, okay, that makes sense. Have I gotten anything yet, Robin?
Check your spam file.
I did. That's the first thing I did. I checked it. I checked my promotion. I checked my spam. I checked all of that. But I'm going to give it a few days. You know, I'm going to wait until my... And I do have his number.
Well, corporate probably has to clear it.
Right.
And by the way, you got a note from Chris. Tracy's ankle. Meanwhile, while this is going on, the MASH theme song came on. Suicide is painless over the Cracker Barrel Muzak. Just kidding. Love you, Tracy, and sending love out to Jan and Kimba.
Oh, and by the way, Kimba's feeling better. She did something to her foot, and she was literally only walking on three legs. She could not put weight on it at all. But so she is doing better. But so let's get... So, you know, we left Cracker Barrel and all that. So back to, we had a great time at the casino, and then we went to dinner at the casino steakhouse, which was wonderful. And I was supposed to work on Monday because this was Sunday because it was my airport day. And, of course, Jan was like, and I'm like, honey, I need to work. But no, you're going to work 7 days straight in the next few days for this day home. And which is not a lot. So I said, fine. And so this is Jan. I didn't even think about this. Because Chris, we were supposed to spend the night up at Solvay, because I reserved two rooms. And Jan's like, why are we spending the night? We only live 2 hours away. And I'm like, you're right. So I canceled our room, and Chris, he stayed the night. And Jan, so while we're at dinner, this is Jan. Who is, for all intents and purposes, the most ornery, cantankerous, unfriendly person in the world when she leaves, you know. When she wants to be. And she works really hard at it. She looks at me and squarely and says, why don't we have Chris over for dinner on Monday? And I looked at her, and I said, who are you? What have you done to my wife? I mean, y'all should know what a big
damn, Chris.
He doesn't even... I said, what did you do that you got an invite to say Crack Porter Kravitz?
Yeah, well, see, I think you need to go off and have a quiet conversation with Christopher and find out what the secret is.
Yes, because I'm like, what the fuck, man? You got an invite to the house? And she was at a barbecue. You hear me?
Damn, girl.
We don't want to cook. And so I said, why don't we just order the special from Lucille's and they deliver it and woo-da-woo, woo-da-woo. And so that's what we did. He came over. We had a really nice meal. Don't tell me, but I'm about to get angry because now these people are coming over here to me with all this fucking luggage. And I'm trying to be nice. And they don't need a van. But anyway, long story short, we had a great time. Chris is amazing. And I'm going to Portland in January. Hold on one quick second. And so that was it. So I gotta go because now I have passengers. But I love everybody, love you, and you guys have a great rest of the evening.
All right, sounds good. By the way, just before you go, Randy Radar went the same place I did. Really, Tracy? Cracker Barrel has a nasty racist reputation. But
I know.
But girl likes the food. I understand it.
Yes, I do. I know, and that is why I'm playing up on that. But anyway, I gotta go. You guys have a wonderful rest of the evening. We will talk soon.
All right, you take care, Tracy. Bye now. And so, God, and oddly enough, when she told me that story, it's like, well, you know, I think I was really little, maybe 5-6 years old. And my sister and I were walking down a grocery store aisle. It was Kroger's. And there was this Pop. We were actually in the Pop aisle, so one of those old school green glass bottle, returnable bottles of Coca-Cola had exploded, and the shrapnel caught her in the ankle. So it was almost like, oh, well, I've kind of lived a version of that story. But both of the lines are open now. The Skype line is open. The stress line is open. Either one is well. You're welcome to engage in some conversation. By the way, cowbell for Matt in San Francisco. In regard to Gwyneth Paltrow and her jade eggs, Matt simply writes, "Jade egg. Mine keeps me regular." Oh, God, when I saw that come in, I had to mute them. It was one of those Scott makes me mute the microphone. Keeps me. Ha. Yeah. And yeah, by the way, yeah, Emilio's not wrong. Gwyneth Paltrow, a vagina-scented candle that caused a couple of small fires. Get your facts straight, Robin. Well, it's not that they weren't... Well, I don't know that I'll ever have any straight... shut up! Not you, Emilio. Me. Going back to the interview that Tracy was talking about. Was the Traffic and Weather Together station KNX Radio, or was the interview on TV? If it was on KNX, I'm surprised they didn't hit him with such an obvious hardball question. Obviously and relevant, I might add. Yeah. I understand. Like I said, $200 more bucks would knock out fundraising for yesterday, which would be fantastic. Got a note from Jack in Shreveport regarding Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas. What puzzles me is that Thomas seems to actually really hate the liberals. I don't think it's an act. Ginny up the base? See what I did there? Don't try this at home. Or satisfy Trump, etc. I saw a quote somewhere that he said, "The liberals made me miserable for 43 years. I'm going to make them miserable now." That's a paraphrase, but it's close, Jack says. Since people have to be taught to hate, who or how did Thomas get taught to hate so damn much? And how was he made miserable for so long by so-called liberals to an extent that payback would go to the extents he's going to and to the numbers of ordinary people that are affected by such cruel policies? The right wing wants a general population that's been so beaten down that there's a cheap labor force without the political power that a large, strong middle class has. But where does Thomas's hatred come from? He's not one of the delusional crazies that call Washington Journal and really believes there was no attack on the Capitol. Well, we don't know what he thinks about the attack on the Capitol because he's married to an insurrectionist, Jack. There's that, for starters. And the liberals who made him crazy, I'm willing to guess, were liberal black people. Because he didn't want to be that. He wanted to fulfill the ancient role of what we now recognize in the modern era as Uncle Ruckus. And I kind of hate the app, but you can't just call him Ruckus. Somewhere along the way, somebody got hold of him. And it happens to people, black and white alike, Asians as well, South Asians, East Asians. But
somebody gets hold of your relatively young mind and pours poison into it. And the next thing you know, you're a lifelong conservative. I have friends like that. And there's no getting away from it. It's heartbreaking. And they think that they pull themselves up by their own bootstraps when they get up every morning and they brush their teeth with the water that's clean enough to brush with because there's a socialized water system out there. It's like that old paragraph about, you know, the conservative, and he drives to work on social highways built by socialism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just, it's toxic and it's terrible. And some people, Jack, they want to be right-wingers and they want to be conservatives because at their core, they are terrified of change. They are terrified of the future. I wonder if, I don't know how long Slappy and Jenny have been married. Maybe some of the liberals that made him miserable were people who looked at him and said, "Dude, you have a white wife and you are a conservative. What the is wrong with you?" And of course, I guess liberals were mean to him. It probably touches upon his confirmation hearings as well, when Anita Hill, arguably a liberal, came forward and talked about what a sleazy bag of guts he is. What a horrible, horrible, pathetic, miserable excuse for a member of the human race he is. And more, it looks like on the day when he breathes out and doesn't breathe in again, that when they go to bury him, they'll have to get an auger to dig his grave with because he's too crooked to bury laying down. I mean, what else do you say about somebody who perjures himself in his confirmation hearing? Somebody who continues to hear cases that involve his wife when his wife is an active participant in an insurrectionist coup against civil governance in the United States of America. What else do you say? But Jack, that's the best I've got. And you're absolutely right about them wanting a beaten down labor force. I mean, I was little tiny the first time I heard my father say, "The Republicans want a two-class society, the very rich and the very poor. And there will be very few of the very rich and very many of the very poor." And he wasn't wrong. And he was basically just espousing, although I suspect he didn't know it, the economic philosophy of that horrible old man, Milton Friedman, whose dead hand still reaches beyond the grave and torments people who don't even know his name. I mean, it's like, by the way, Christopher says, new slogan, Cracker Barrel. Tracy forgot to mention I came up with a new ad campaign slogan for Cracker Barrel. Cracker Barrel, where we know how to cut a bitch. Okay. That's it. Cracker Barrel. We'll cut a bitch. But the apple butter with the hot biscuits is so damn good. I'm sorry. I understand that. Matt, you hurt Ralph's too. Oh my God, the jade egg keeps fanning. I think she's probably still giggling. Or perhaps even guffawing. Okay, where else do we want to go on this? Because this is fun. John Fetterman is apparently, I just like him so much. He's apparently going to punk and tweak the pink tomato nose of Dr. Oz all the way to November. And John Fetterman will absolutely not let up on Dr. Oz for, you know, not being from Pennsylvania, among other things. And now Dr. Oz has filmed a campaign commercial
And John Fetterman pointed out, pro tip, don't film an ad for your Pennsylvania Senate campaign from your mansion in New Jersey. Because it turns out the house that they shot the ad at was... based on the fact that Dr. Oz, I don't know why I keep calling him a Dr. Oz, he put out a video that went after the mayor of Philadelphia, Jim Kenney. And the video was shot in a house, and the house itself was profiled 2 years ago in People Magazine, of all places, and People Magazine called it, quote, the New Jersey mansion Dr. Oz and his wife built from scratch 20 years ago. So hence, John Fetterman saying, pro tip, don't film an ad for your Pennsylvania Senate campaign from your mansion in New Jersey. And Fetterman is doing really pleasantly well at this point in time. So not only is he not from Pennsylvania, he won't even film his ads in Pennsylvania. It's not like there's... I mean, my God, you've got some great backdrops in a place like Philly. Awesome backdrops in Western PA. I don't know that... Does Oz even know Western PA exists? Or does he think that... never mind, don't say that. Good luck. Good luck. And tomorrow, of course, we will all be watching must-see TV, I presume. It is expected. It's not on. Oh, I'm sorry. It's not on must-see TV. There will be private testimony by White House counsel Pat Cipollone. And that private testimony may actually make it rain dimes in regard to Nitwit Nero's behavior before January 6th. So, okay, we don't have to set our TiVos or anything. It'll be private. And down here into some other areas of the news. I mentioned the terrorist attack. I mean, it is. When you attack something with explosives sufficient to blow up a 42-ton piece of granite, I think it's safe to call that terrorism. The Georgia Guidestones are no more. I've got it in the stack for Tara and I's conversation. Tara and me's? Never mind. During the Malloy program. But there is an investigation underway as to who did it. I would think, given the fact that the edifice has been the focus of a lot of wackadoodle conspiracy theories over the years. I would hope that there were a lot of cameras. And again, how they managed to, you know, get that much explosive in there, I don't know. 4 a.m. I've wondered if maybe they use Tannerite. You know, you can go out and buy Tannerite anywhere you want to. Or, you know, it's like sporting goods store and stuff, because it makes pasty-faced, doughy freedom-loving Second Amendmenters real happy when they get mad at the Yeti Cooler Company for not playing footsie with the National Ruble Association. Remember when that happened? And they the maggots all went out because they was all pissed off and filled up their Yetis with Tannerite and then set it off in the distance and shot it with a .30-06 and made it go all boom. Bear in mind, Yetis are coolers that run. I mean, you can drop $500 on a Yeti without even trying.
And so they went out and they blew up their Yetis to show their undying loyalty for the National Ruble Association. Well, Tanner, maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was a Yeti cooler full of Tannerite. Maybe that was enough. The whole thing together was weighed in at 119,000 tons. Or 119 tons, I'm sorry. 119 tons. And it's been there since 1980. So the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, hard at work on the case, says that they think the explosive device was detonated around 4 a.m. That's based on the fact that people said, yeah, we heard something, a big old bang at 4 a.m. Can't get anything like that past the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. And by the way, if you want to see a really brilliant examination of the Guidestones thing, as Randy Radar points out, John Oliver had just done a piece on the Guidestones. I'm sure you can find it somewhere if you want to watch it badly enough. Oh, by the way, Tracy got a note from Billable Rick. Hi, Tracy. It seems to me that the shrapnel injuries that Tracy suffered from glass from the broken syrup container are not any less severe than those of the woman who got a $1 million settlement judgment from McDonald's for being served with overly hot coffee that she spilled on her lap. Unlike the person who got burned by the coffee, Tracy actually bled from her wounds. Time for Tracy to hire a personal injury attorney. I'm not Saul Goodman, so don't take cases outside my area of expertise. I understand. And, of course, the McDonald's woman, she had third-degree burns over most of her pubic region. And the reason that she got that judgment was because evidence came in at trial that McDonald's had been warned time after time after time after time that somebody one of these days was going to get badly burned on their coffee. Or with their coffee. But the McDonald's people made the decision, cost-benefit analysis. Yeah, but we sell a lot of coffee because we make it so hot that the smell of it just fills the whole store and makes everybody want a cup of coffee. And when that evidence came in, it made it pretty easy to write the check for the injured victim. But, yeah, Tracy probably will not require the reconstructive surgery that the McDonald's victim needed, but she's got something coming. She darn sure does. I mean, check me if I'm wrong, Billable, but she was an invitee for business purposes, and that means that they owed her the highest duty of due care, did they not? Billable adds. Chris's expanding head, with all the lavish praise that Tracy and Jan are heaping on Chris, I sense his head expanding from 800 miles away. Oops, bam, splat. It exploded! Chris, check in. Make sure, let us know that your head did not, in fact, go boom. Oh, and curiously, thank you, Ralphs, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. Turns out that conspiracy goobers are saying, no, nobody didn't explode nothing on the Guidestones. That was just God striking it with the lightning bolt. Dummies, that's Zeus that has the lightning bolt. Oh, let's see. Because there's... Oh, this little piece of information. Some Tennessee sheriff's deputies answered a call at a home recently, Knox County. One of the deputies was Lydia Driver. Her partner, I guess, was Deputy Jordan Hurst. And they went to a
They went to a call at a residence, and what is described as an aggressive pit bull, a dog, showed up and went after, so they say, Knox County Deputy Lydia Driver. And as a result of the dog attacking the deputy, her partner pulled his trusty service sidearm, and in trying to blow away the dog, blasted his partner in the leg. Something tells me Barney's only going to be able to carry a bullet in his shirt pocket. They actually had to, not because of what the dog did, they had to rush a deputy driver to the hospital, where she underwent emergency surgery because her partner shot her in the leg. And she remains in intensive care at the University of Tennessee Medical Center. And animal control came and took away the pit bull, and they probably, I'm guessing, euthanized the pit bull. It's kind of like the story the other day of the Florida man. No, I think he was in South Carolina, Stan. I take that back. It was South Carolina, Stan. Annette showed me the story. Guy got eaten by an alligator. Killed. And so animal control came out. And this was, you know, it's not like he was out. No, he was in a residential area because it's South Carolina, Stan, and they build houses where alligators live. So animal control came out and killed the alligator for being an alligator. This eye for an eye. Well, you know, you got to kill them once they've tasted human flesh, because then they develop a taste for it and they become a man eater. That's it. Oh, please. How about trying to maybe educate Otne Ute Aitbre, if you one what I ain may umen haze, to not so cavalierly trespass onto wetlands areas where alligators, you know, live. Ha! Silly girl. That's never going to happen. There's a dollar to be made! Oh, and another cop story while we're at it. Timothy Lohman applied for a coppin' job in the tiny Pennsylvania town of Tioga, Pennsylvania. There are about 700 people in Tioga, Pennsylvania. And the minute that the news of his hiring came out, Timothy Lohman, well, Timothy Lohman turned around and resigned. Now, why would that be a news story? Some of you probably recognize the name of Timothy Lohman. It was a rather ordinary day in 2014 in the greater Cleveland area when Timothy Lohman rolled up on what he thought was a dangerous black man with a gun. And inside of less than 2 minutes, blew away 12-year-old Tamir Rice. And Tioga, Pennsylvania, was going to let him be the only member of the Tioga, Pennsylvania police force. The mayor of Tioga is a fellow by the name of David Wilcox. He said, I was not allowed to take his resume or look into his background. I was under the impression that there was a thorough background check into him, that he didn't have any issues. He said, desperate to make an excuse. But it's not the background check or the issues that matter. It's the fact that things like
being cleared of murdering a 12-year-old in cold blood if you're a cop really doesn't follow you. He can go and cop somewhere else. It's kind of like the Roman Catholic Church. They find out that a priest is fucking little boys, and they say, well, that's not a good look for us. And they tell him to... I mean, there's an entire history of this. They move him over to another diocese and say, stop fucking little boys, okay? Okay. I wonder if the people of Tioga, Pennsylvania know what a... Well, probably a bad term. Bullet they dodged. David Wilcox, who does not know anything about the first law of holes, you know, when you're in one, stop digging, said, well, you know, I found it strange that someone would move here all the way from Cleveland, Ohio for $18 an hour, but I heard that he wanted to get away from it all and come here to hunt and fish. There were protesters who made it known that they were not happy about this. Subodh Chandra is the lawyer for the Rice family and said, while it is welcome news that Loman won't be inflicting himself on the people of Tioga, the officials of that town need to be held accountable for their atrociously poor judgment. And I don't disagree with Counselor Chandra. He was a rookie cop, Loman was, with his training officer when they rolled up on Tamir Rice and he jumped out of the car and blew the poor boy away. I guess this is the police blotter portion of the program. Milwaukee, on June 15th, a woman named Brazil Johnson was murdered. She was shot near an intersection of a couple of streets in Greater Milwaukee, and nobody knows who murdered Brazil Johnson. Unsolved mystery. And it remains unsolved since June 15th. So that's 15 plus, that's a little over 3 weeks. Well, a $28,000 reward has been put out for information leading to the arrest and conviction of Brazil Johnson's murder. She was 28 years old. The reward money was put up by, among other things, the Milwaukee LGBT Community Center, the Cream City Foundation, Milwaukee Crime Stoppers. They all put forward $1,000 each. And the president of Milwaukee Crime Stoppers, Michael Hoopy, a lawyer, pledged another $25,000. Because, you see, Brazil Johnson, 28 years old, was a black trans woman. And the Milwaukee County Supervisor, Peter Bergelis, said that there's an epidemic of violence against trans people, and mostly black trans women. And he said he hoped the reward money would provide an added incentive for anyone who has information about this horrific crime to come forward and help bring about justice for Brazil's loved ones. I hope she had loved ones. I hope she wasn't out on the streets because she'd been kicked out there and treated like crap. For anybody keeping track, Brazil Johnson, as of the 15th day of June, became the 17th trans person to be murdered in the U.S. in 2022. So that's roughly almost 3 trans people a month murdered in this country. And black trans women are
66% of all of the victims of murder among trans and gender nonconforming people. That's a number from Crime Stoppers. Apparently she did have family that did love her. Kevin Turner runs the Milwaukee LGBT Community Center. He said, "We stand with the family as well. We're here to support our transgender community, which is being attacked on record levels, and we want to make sure their voices are being heard." Poor baby. I hope somebody finds, I hope somebody wants the $28,000 enough to turn in who did it, because somebody knows who did it. It's just that in many communities, there's not much interest in finding out. They had no choice, Ron and Raleigh says. This happens too often. White men are white men are scared a lot, Ron says. From the Associated Press, an inquest jury found Wednesday that two Seattle police officers were justified in fatally shooting a mentally unstable pregnant black mother of four children inside her apartment when she menaced them with knives in 2017. The inquest verdict was unanimous, saying that Jason Anderson and Stephen McNew, a couple of white guys, had no reasonable alternative to using deadly force. Somehow I'm thinking a couple of cops that are armored up should be able to, I don't know, tase somebody. I mean, how many different things do we put on their little Batman utility belts? Tasers? Clubs? Pepper spray? Ms. Lyles was not okay. She had threatened some police officers earlier with a pair of shears and talked about how she was going to morph into a wolf. The two white cops said, "Get back, get back." And then, and this is always, you know, they pumped 7 rounds of lead into her. I'm pretty sure she was crippled up by the, and I'm not using that as a derogatory term. She was crippled up by the, probably the first bullet. Might have been the first one that killed her. But the jury was asked about tasers, and they, nah, it wouldn't have worked. Them tasers don't work on them kind of people. She was pregnant, and as she lay bleeding out, her baby, who was crying, crawled on top of her. And another little boy came out of a bedroom and looked at the cops and said, "You shot my mother." Now, don't think for a minute that the pro-life movement would have a goddamn word to say about this. The woman-hating movement? No, because that 15-week fetus, that wasn't the kind of citizen that the various churches had in mind when they were talking about little U.S. citizens in the womb. And you know, for all the grunting and moaning that the Roman Catholic Church does about life in the womb, I bet you they would not have given that baby a Christian burial. Because it wasn't a baby. It was just a fetus. Just a fetus. Thanks for sharing that, Ron. Let me see here. Yeah, tasers are not harmless. They can cause heart attacks, Randy Radar says. But you know what's a lot less harmless? Bullets. Bullets. Leah in New York says, killed with 7 bullets. And how many bullets did she not stop from getting to the wall? They shot her 7 times. I assume they hit their... Given that they're probably 9mm pistols, they probably all went through her. That it is only by the grace of something that they didn't manage to blow away the baby or blow away the little boy in the bedroom during the inquest. Her daddy did cry out, "You killed my daughter." Maybe they need to go to work at like a Walmart. If they're that scared, they need a different line of work. Meanwhile, from over at something called Oprah Daily, I've never read it, but the headline spoke to me. Elizabeth Barajas Roman writes, "My wife, Magali, and I met on the very first day of freshman year at Oberlin College." Very hoity-toity, swanky liberal arts college in Ohio. "I won't say anything cliched about love at first sight, but there was an undeniable connection between us, and what everyone wrote off as a cute college romance has blossomed into a profound 27-year relationship and an 18-year marriage. When the Supreme Court dismantled Roe, we knew queer couples like us probably had much to fear, that no one's rights were safe. What we didn't expect was just how directly Justice Thomas's concurring opinion would prove us right. In it, Justice Thomas says that cases paved the way for gay marriage and should be reconsidered. Some pundits will even say that it's a good thing and that gay marriage should be debated again, that these issues should be part of a democratic process decided by voters, state by state. But I already know what it's like to live in a world where human rights are bestowed by minority rule. I've lived during a time when I had to accept that I would be forced to live a smaller life in order to share it with someone I loved. I know what it's like to have employers, city officials, banks, hospitals, even my dog's veterinarian, force me to affirm my relationship in a multitude of taxing, expensive, and humiliating ways, only to get a quarter of the respect and rights that straight couples received. The idea that soon our lives could be legally invalidated, both as women and as a queer couple, hurts my heart, but the cruelty is the point, isn't it?" It's worth the read. Again, it's over at Oprah Daily. "The end of Roe is terrifying for queer couples." She said, "It is important for people who have never had their bodily autonomy or intimate relationships up for public debate and approval. Listen to those who have. This is not a Twitter argument or an academic exercise. This is the fight of our lives. This is about fairness and dignity. These days, I often think of the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. quote, 'The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice.' My entire life, I interpreted those words to mean that justice was a law of nature, like gravity. Its progress slows, sometimes maddeningly so, but still always arcing for movement toward the good. Today, however, I realize the constant is not the arc itself, but the people who ensure it takes the shape of fairness, of equality, of love. The constant," she says, "is us." There is, as Paul from Parts Unknown pointed out so brilliantly to us yesterday, there are so many things that are put at hazard by the Dobbs decision that our majestic, most puissant, dread sovereign, supreme Catholic majesties either didn't take into account or didn't give a damn about. And we are going to probably be years finding out just how dire their ruling was. It goes on and on and on. There's a trans woman in Montana who can't get her birth certificate changed. She's known she was trans from the time she was 10 years old. Her name's Susan Howard. finally, at the age of 62, she came to grips with the fact that, yeah, she's trans. So just like I did, she went on hormone therapy. She had gender-affirming surgery. And she started down the path of changing her name and gender on official documents. She said, it's been a godsend for me. I feel so right and at ease with myself for the first time in so many ways. Hallelujah. Amen. Because we have a Democratic administration, it's easy to change your Social Security card. She was able to change her driver's license. She was able to change her pension accounts. But the one thing that matters most, her birth certificate, she cannot change. That's the only thing hanging up. She said everything else, everybody else has acknowledged my gender, but they will not do it. Because Montana is one of four states where trans people are legislatively and judicially prohibited from changing their birth certificate. And the Republicans in Montana say, well, is it because we got to preserve the accuracy of vital records? Well, you know what? That vital record also records her as weighing, I don't know, 6 pounds, 2 ounces. I'm pretty sure she doesn't weigh 6 pounds, 2 ounces anymore. Probably also says that she was, I don't know, 22 and three-quarter inches long. That is probably also no longer accurate. But I know a little bit about what she's dealing with because I'm still engaged in the hoop jumping of trying to change mine in Alabama, and it's entirely possible I may never be able to, depending on just how shitty Alabama decides to be. And there are circumstances where that really, really matters. Getting your passport changed is not that much of a big deal. Neither is Social Security. I actually had to get a physician to sign a paper to change my gender marker on my driver's license, but I got it done. But Lord God, I still haven't done the name change. Because that's $200 plus that I simply cannot spare from everything else that I have to deal with. And then there's the matter of trying to change my name in Birmingham. Or not change my name, but my gender marker. And Alabama makes that Byzantine as hell. And even then, when you're successful, this is just how shitty they are. They stamp the birth certificate. This document has been altered. Damn right it has. I am definitely no longer somewhere around 7 pounds. Eyes are still blue. God Almighty. That poor woman. I wonder how many trans people there are in Montana. Tennessee has a law that says you can't amend your birth certificate. Oklahoma stand, trans people can't change their birth certificate. And yeah, here in West Virginia, it used to be that the circuit court could approve changes to the gender marker on a birth certificate, but our Republican Supreme Court said, nope, the circuit court does not have jurisdiction to order the state Department of Health to make such a change. And even in Alabama, you can't change your marker unless you've been able to go through surgery. And then you need a letter from your doctor saying that you have been permanently and irrevocably changed. Gee, thanks. So that's it. Thorn in the Side Thursday is at an end. Again, a reminder, Tara and I will be sitting in for Mike Malloy here in about an hour and 5 minutes. And we will be doing the same tomorrow so that Mike can get all the way over his dose of the Rona. Thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you so much. We need more. Oh, God, we need so many more. If you're there and you can afford something like less than 50 cents per program on a month, a $10 subscription gets doubled thanks to our buddy Zed. Up to five of them. I'd love to see those notifications come through. It would be more helpful than you know. An extra $50 a month makes things a little bit more manageable in what has been for literally almost two decades a day-to-day, week-to-week, and month-to-month struggle. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thank you. Thank you so much this evening for getting us down to $500 to go. That means we'll be at 8 tomorrow for Friday on the Front Porch to get caught up for the week. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room this evening. Thanks for keeping us brain-free. My brain, apparently, is back. But then again, brain is sort of, I don't know, I think anybody can be brain at this point. But brain sent me a Confederate flag this evening. Oh, you doll. Fuck you. But thanks for doing that, guys. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Again, Malloy, 9 o'clock. Best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is Head On .live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Proudly a union shop. Please stay safe. Wear those masks. Protect yourself against not only, you know, the Trump pandemic, but against monkeypox as well. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, maybe wipe down surfaces again because of what Paul from Parts Unknown was saying about monkeypox. Use your hand sanitizer regularly, liberally, frequently. Maintain your social distance 15 to 20 feet if you possibly can. And, of course, if somebody comes burbling towards you, saying, "Stand still! I'll shoot that dog!" Get away quick, because they're liable to shoot you in the leg. And they're also the plague. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.